feeding your passion for local sports in the afternoon. It's the Drive Guys with Kevin Gleason and Kyle Draper on your radio at 1140 AM.
Streaming audio at SacktownSports.com and the Sacktown Sports app.
You can also watch the show on YouTube at Sacktown Sports 1140. Here are the Drive Guys with Kevin Gleason and Kyle Draper.
Well, I knew this was a huge game tonight. They're all huge from here, however many are going to be left. But this game, Drapes, it's even bigger than I realized, because I came in today through the Jerry Reynolds Media Center entrance, and I look up at one of the message boards, and it says, rivalry game. And I look at, you know, the ribbon boards around here, rivalry game. And on the big board, the big video board over center court, rivalry game, Kings Clippers. I had no idea.
But I'm all for it. I want this smoke tonight. Two teams battling for playoff position. Clippers not solidified yet at that fourth spot. The Kings trying to get into the top six. And so whatever motivation you need, maybe it's a signal to the players. Like, hey, this game means something. This is a rivalry game. So I'm all for the smoke tonight. Let's go.
I guess it's because it's sponsored by Clean California and two California teams. I don't know, but it does bring to mind the fact that the Kings' first ever game in Sacramento was played against the L.A. Clippers.
L.A. Clippers.
Years ago.
Yes. Who was on that team? Was Norm Nixon on that squad back in the day?
Let's see. I think, what was the guy that ended up from Louisville? Derek?
Oh, Derek Smith.
He ended up coming here because he played so well, and that didn't work out that night. But, yes, that was the first game in Sacramento. And tonight we have, you know, we're given to exaggerating things, but this is one of the biggest regular season games in Sacramento Kings history, isn't it? You got a lot on the line tonight.
Yeah, it is, man. But the last time we had one of those, we lost to the Dallas Mavericks. So, like, that's how me and Jay spun it on Friday.
Yeah.
Like, this is like,
but you were right.
We were right, but the outcome left, you know. So now we got another biggest regular season game until the next one. And then
Don't they just get bigger and bigger almost until you take care of your business?
This is a massive one. This is a huge one. First of all, it's against a conference foe. And we talked about the tiebreakers when it comes to the Western Conference playoffs. You know, if you're tied, let's say, with the Pelicans, well, you'd lose the tiebreaker. But if you're tied with Dallas, let's say, it goes to division, but you're not in the same division. So then it goes to conference. And so this is a big game here. You got to get this win tonight.
Yeah. Here's how funky this year has been. Of course, Kawhi Leonard not playing tonight. Normally, that'd be great news, right? And maybe it is for the Kings. You hate to see anybody injured. But a lot of Kings fans right now, they hear that news, they're like, oh, no.
Right.
Right? Because the Kings struggle so much against short-handed teams. It's bizarro basketball.
It is. But fortunately, this Clippers team has a plethora of stars. You know, it'd be different if you're playing San Antonio, no Victor Wembanyama.
Very good use of the word plethora.
Plethora, write that one down. I might use that later tonight.
It sounded right.
On the
I don't call know
what
I mean.
As well.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
It's different than if you're playing Charlotte with no LaMelo. I mean, you still got James Harden, Paul George, Russell Westbrook. There's enough big names to get up for tonight's matchup.
Mm-hmm. I think the path forward for the Kings, you know, we've talked about this guy and that guy and stepping up and all that, and we'll talk more about it. Tonight, finally, the talking ends, at least for a couple hours we play the game. But I do think the Kings, they've embraced this grittiness to a degree. Okay. They're playing more physically because the officials are allowing them to. And I think they have to become even more physical and more gritty here without Malik. I think that's the way they're going to have to be the rest of the year. We may not have the talent you have. We don't have the talent that we had, but we're going to outwork you.
But yes, and you're 100% right with that. You know, my only concern is that in our DNA.
Mm.
Like, can we do that over the sustained period of time? Like you said, we're going to have to. No Malik Monk, you know, he was one of our emotional leaders out there. And, you know, I think it really starts with the two guys at the top, De'Aaron Fox and Keon Ellis. If they're causing havoc, if they're getting up into the opponent, if they're making James Harden's life difficult, miserable tonight, then that sets the tone for everything else behind it. And so, no, you're right, man, but it starts with the two guys out front, the guards, I believe.
I got to tell you about our guy, RJ, who runs our audio here and keeps us on the air, I should say. Two things. First of all, when I came in, he was like, you know, I think the Kings, if they play their A game, they're going to win. He's very confident. I see some people on the chat confident. But he also said, he was talking about you and, you know, how you know everybody and everybody comes by.
Yeah,
and
these
said,
are my people.
He said, you know, I think maybe Drapes is running for mayor. And I said, yes, but would you vote for him?
Oh, that's the question.
And he hesitated a minute. He said, yeah. Hey, he said, Drapes would get things done.
Maybe I will. let me string together a few more playoff appearances. Remember, Kings hadn't made the playoffs in, you know, more than a decade until I got here.
Yeah,
so
that's
I like
true.
To, you know, take part in ending that drought.
Yes.
You know, get a little bit of credit for that. And, you know, and now we got this fantastic radio show that everybody listens to.
Yeah.
You know, the best radio show in all of Sacramento. I like to take some credit for that.
You
helped
should.
Out with that, too.
I pitch in where I can.
Maybe. You know what? Crazy as it sounds, my mother always said, you should run for office someday.
Really?
Yeah, so you're the second person, so maybe I will. You and RJ, that's three people.
Yeah.
Honestly,
he thought about it for a second. He's like, absolutely, I would vote for him. Of course, the mayor of Sacramento currently, Mayor Steinberg, had some interesting things to say today, which we will get to in a little bit, about the potential for the A's to move here. So that's a big story today as well, as we get ready for the Kings and the Clippers. How much are we going to need from Sasha tonight, Trey Lyles? Is that silly to suggest we may need anything from Sasha? Wishful thinking?
I don't think so. No, I think we are going to need something. You know, this Clippers bench led by Norman Powell, they got some firepower coming off the bench, 11th in the league in bench scoring per game. The Kings are ninth. And I think when you lose a guy like Malik, who's our scorer off the bench now? It has to be somebody. Is it Trey Lyles? Is it Sasha? Somebody got to step up. It has to be one of those guys off the bench. I think we need, you know, at least one bench scorer to be in double figures tonight.
Mm-hmm.
It's a massive loss. And remember, Malik seems to always play well against the Clippers. Remember last year, the 176-175, him and De'Aaron Fox each scoring 40-plus points.
Fox plays well against him, too, though.
Yeah, Fox plays well also. And so, you know, we're at the point of the season now, too, Whitey, and De'Aaron Fox talked about it yesterday. Sure, him and Domas got to, you know, be the leaders, play well, but they need all hands on deck. Everybody has to step up a little bit. And I would like to see Sasha. I would like to see Trey Lyles get some more minutes, have more of an impact out here tonight.
I agree with you, all hands on deck. And I think that goes beyond the bench into the stands. And here's what I mean. I'm never one of those guys that blames fans for this or that. Never like, well, they need to show up or they need to cheer loud or whatever. You know, fans can do whatever they want to do because they literally pay the money. Mm-hmm. However, I think right now, and I know Kings fans are capable of this, the Kings need a home court advantage, whatever makes that up, more than ever, right?
Right.
And it wouldn't hurt if the fans, again, you can't expect this because they already bring it at a higher level than anybody else. If the Kings fans are able to amp it up the next few home games, it wouldn't hurt. That's all I'm saying. They need it. They need everything they can get.
They do, totally. And you missed it on Friday when I came in with my De'Aaron Fox jersey on.
I had my shooting sleeve.
I had my headband, all hands on deck. I was trying to do my part.
Uh-huh.
And I'm with you on the fans. But let me ask you this, though, because I feel like you mentioned this. The fans are always ready.
Yes, they're always
geeked up. Now, what if it goes sideways? Because we've heard booing in this building before. Is this a time where this fan base needs to, even if you're down 6, 8, 10, you have to do your part to try and lift the guys
up.
Don't be front-running fans and only cheer when the team is doing well.
You know,
we need them lifted up tonight, too.
I agree. We've talked about booing. Should fans boo or not? Whatever, you can do what you want. However, in my opinion, the rest of the way this year, booing is off the table. The booing was because, hey, we thought this team was better. Now, does that mean you should boo? Well, you have a right to. But that's what the booing was about. Hey, they're supposed to be better, and they're losing these games they're supposed to win. Well, now, as shorthanded as they are, that is off the board.
Yeah.
Right now, the Kings, they're hanging on, and they need everybody behind them.
Right, and I'm with you. Yeah, the crowd, the ushers, security people, concessions, whatever. You got to raise your game, you know. And if there are any, you know, Clippers fans that try to get into the building, maybe revoke their ticket. Whatever it takes to get a win tonight, Whitey. You know what I mean? Seriously, no, it's we're at a critical spot in the season right now because we're eyeballing the standings. Every game is important. You know, Phoenix is off tonight, but you got Golden State taking on Dallas tonight. We're keeping an eye on that. And so every game, every minute, every second tonight is going to be huge. And hopefully our guys have that mindset, too, that, you know what, we're coming out. We're ready to face this Clippers team, even though they're shorthanded. No Kawhi Leonard. They still got plenty of stars. And so I think it's going to be a great game tonight.
I'm sure there are a few of them out there. You mentioned the term Clipper fan. And they're out there. But they don't have a ton of fans, do they? I mean, you think of like Knicks fans, Laker fans,
right.
Warrior fans.
Yeah, I don't think they travel
Clipper
like
Clipper fans, there aren't that many, are they?
Yeah, they're out there, but it's not the same. It's definitely not the same. But I will say, there's James Harden fans. There's Russell Westbrook fans. There's Paul George fans.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Clippers Nation got some of those guys.
Sure.
You know, even though, you know, the Clippers are like the city of Los Angeles. A bunch of transplants. A mm-hmm. bunch of guys from other teams that come in. And now, you know, they band together. And so they brought some fans with them from OKC, from Indiana, from Philly. You know, and so fans of those players, they're out there.
Yeah, and I'm not criticizing or ridiculing fans of the Clippers. They're just, you know, it's kind of the nature of the franchise. They haven't had that many. I'm trying to think of celebrity Clipper fans. And, you know, it's
Billy
in L.A.
Crystal.
Billy Crystal also. Do you remember Malcolm in the Middle, that guy Frankie Muniz?
Oh, Frankie Muniz, yeah.
He was a Clipper fan. That's about the only one I can remember.
I know. Who else, right?
Yeah.
You got Clipper Darryl. That's about it. But he's a glorified fan.
The Lakers, Jack Nicholson, and everybody going way back.
Yeah.
And the Clippers, they got Malcolm in the Middle, so yeah.
You know, the difference between the two franchises was interesting. The last time we played the Clippers was down there in L.A., and Sacramento took over.
Kings
fans took over. That couldn't happen in the Lakers game. We tried in the Lakers game. It wasn't as strong. But that Clippers game, we took over that arena down there.
All right. So we're setting the table here for what could be a huge, unforgettable night. Big day for Sacramento on the baseball front as well, potentially. When we come back, we'll tell you about the meeting that the A's had with Oakland today and the meeting that the A's are supposed to have tomorrow with Sacramento. Next year from the Golden One Drive Guys, Sactown Sports.
The Drive Guys, powering your afternoons Monday through Friday on Sactown Sports.
Oh, yeah. Big night tonight and a big day for Sacramento baseball-wise, potentially. We're not sure exactly what went down today, but you know that Sacramento angling to get the A's here on a 3-year temporary basis. We also know that the A's met with Oakland today. Now, Kyle, it's really important for us to be careful when we consider whom or who we're consuming information from. So
what
do you think of this source on Twitter, especially as it relates to anything having to do with this story? Carmichael Dave.
I don't know. Does he have sources? Does he have any connections, if you will?
He apparently does have some sources. Now, Casey Pratt today in the Bay Area, he posted a video on Twitter about the meetings, which you might want to check out. Carmichael Dave added this. He said, good stuff from Casey here. Agree wholeheartedly. As for progress, Carmichael Dave, who has, you know, some ins with some of the big ownership types in town. Carmichael Dave, Oakland and the A's are still quite a ways apart. They meet with Sacramento tomorrow.
Mm.
All signs point to a deal being struck and an announcement either end of week or early
next. Who said that?
Carmichael Dave. Now, he doesn't say.
Really?
He implies that it's a deal with Sacramento. That's not. I mean, you could still read that either way, though.
You could read that either way, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Ooh, that's spicy. Why would you meet with Sacramento?
Mm-hmm.
And then Carmichael Dave saying a deal would be struck into this week, early next week.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm.
If a deal with Oakland is going to be struck into this week or early next week, why come up to Sacramento?
Right.
You know? And so, wow, this could be major, major news.
We also have this, a statement from Mayor Steinberg. You mentioned, you may run for mayor someday.
Run for office, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And you'll probably wait till Mayor Steinberg goes.
Yeah, yeah. I don't want to oppose him. I'll wait.
Yeah. This is what he said to Jake Gaudin from, I think he's, CBS 13?
CBS 13, yeah.
Quote, it's important, this is the mayor, it's important for me to express my sincere hope that the A's remain in Oakland. I have been consistent in my support for this from the very beginning. However, I believe that Sacramento has so much to offer and would be a fantastic temporary landing spot for the A's. Our city and region have a rich history in baseball and a deep love for sports. Sacramento would wholeheartedly welcome Major League Baseball, as we have shown with the Sacramento Kings. Second to Oakland, Sacramento is the best choice end quote. So now we just play the waiting game a little bit.
Okay.
Wait for them to meet tomorrow and see what comes out of that.
What's going to be interesting is the reaction if it is Sacramento. And I'm talking from the fans, media members. Are we excited? Are we, yes, this is going to be awesome? Are we in our feelings because of Oakland's situation?
It's complicated.
You know, it's definitely a complicated week ahead for the city of Sacramento. It sounds like, to me, and I'm reading between the lines, the mayor's statement. He wants this to happen.
Mm-hmm.
If, obviously, it doesn't go to Oakland. We heard Vivek also talk about it, and it seemed like, you know, he had some inside info. And I think our quote-unquote leaders would welcome this, Oakland,
yes,
the A's to Sacramento. But you can't. It's one of those things where you can't be too excited, though. Like, on the inside, you can be bustling and happy, but you can't project it like, oh, this is an awesome day, when your neighbors, you know, an hour away are hurting right now.
Yeah, it's interesting to your point about the city leaders, and they've been working on this for a long time. If you go back, it was maybe a year ago or more where we first started hearing about Sacramento involved in a effort to get the A's here. And I remember my first thought was, yeah, good luck with that.
Right? Yeah.
You know, but they persevered. Casey Pratt's story that he posted today on YouTube, he talked about Vivek, because apparently Vivek is really the driving force here.
Yep.
The mayor can say what he wants, but obviously somebody needs to have the money
have the
and
money,
wherewithal
right,
to make
yes,
it happen. Casey Pratt says everybody involved says that Vivek has good intentions at heart, but he wants to own a Major League Baseball team, wants to bring one here, and a lot of people in Oakland they're not happy, and I'm talking about people with the city, the county, they're not happy that Sacramento is getting involved in this because in a way it's really weakening,
undercutting
Oakland's,
them a little
yes,
bit.
Yes, yes, and that's putting all the fan stuff aside, and it's
right,
significant. But just the nuts and bolts of the negotiations.
Yeah, and I could see that.
Yeah.
I could see why Oakland would be upset. But ultimately, the leaders here in Sacramento are only loyal to one area, and that's the city of
mm-hmm,
Sacramento.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you want us to sit out and they go to Salt Lake City? Would that make you happy if you're, you know, Oakland city leaders? And so I could see why they would say, you know, don't bail them out. Don't help them out, you know. But the A's are going to go somewhere. And they're going to go somewhere, and we want it to be, at least I do, I want it to be Sacramento if it's not Oakland.
Mm-hmm.
I want it to be Sacramento. And so, you know, from a city leader's perspective, like I said, it's something you can't necessarily champion publicly. Like, it's not a rah-rah kind of thing.
In some corners it is. I know you're trying to be very sensitive.
Yeah, I'm trying to be sensitive.
Some people are really, really excited about it.
Yeah, and I get it. And, you know, I think it would be great for the city of Sacramento, even if it's only for 3 years. I mean, it if this thing takes off, it's sort of like OKC. I talked to you. You know, we talked about it with basketball. You know, when the Hornets at the time, New Orleans Hornets, relocated to Oklahoma City, you know, the fan base got behind that, and it showed the NBA, man, basketball can thrive here. And then Clay Bennett bought the Sonics and moved them. And so I think, you know, for 3 years, the city of Sacramento can show the world, show Major League Baseball, yes, we can get behind a team. We can support a team. We just hate it that it's that ownership. That's the thing
mm-hmm,
that's, you know, hard to swallow. But I think ultimately it would be good for Sacramento.
By the way, side note on that whole thing, and maybe you know all about this, but when the team left Seattle, people in Seattle, of course, they were furious at the commissioner. Commissioner Stern at the time, because Seattle supported their team. They couldn't get an arena built.
Right, right.
Next thing you know, no more Sonics. So then when the Kings, years later, the Kings nearly left here, they were maybe going to go to Seattle, and the commissioner was really deeply involved with Mayor Johnson and involved with keeping the Kings here. I always thought that, all right, the commissioner learned his lesson. That hurt so much that they saw a team leave a city that loved them. They didn't want
right,
that to happen again. But I've heard from a couple different sources that one of the factors may have been the commissioner was so mad about what they said about him in Seattle, he didn't want them to get another team.
Really?
I don't know.
Got personal that,
yeah,
there, huh?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
I don't know about that. Oh, okay. I don't know, but thank goodness, one way or the other, the King stayed here.
Let me ask you this, though. Here, you know, this is the one drawback to this whole Oakland A's situation coming to Sacramento. what happens in 3 years when, all right, it was fun, guys. Now we're back. We're off to Vegas, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Would there be some emotional attachment from Sacramento fans for the A's? And then, bam, all right, they're gone. And so, you know, you got to look at it on the back end of it. Also, how would that affect the area, the city?
Sure.
Emotionally as well, too.
It looks to me like the play here is you're trying to thread the needle, right? You're trying to get the team here and then hope that Vegas falls through. I mean, we can talk about, oh, we'll prove our worth to Major League Baseball, get an expansion team. I mean, maybe, but that's way down the road. So if the hope then is bring them here, Vegas falls through, you keep the team. Well, I think somewhere about halfway through this three-year period, at least, we'll have a clearer idea of whether they're going or not. So at the end of year two, if we know that they're going to Vegas, then if they left at the year end of three, I think it would be less emotional, right? We would have had a lot more time to prepare ourselves. We'd already know they'd be going.
It's a short time thing, and you go into it with your eyes open. You know, it's not you're being hoodwinked or anything like that. And so, no, I hear you.
It's just a guess. I mean, I don't know.
But think about this. And I know this team doesn't have much star power like they used to. But
they don't have any. Come on.
Let me tell this. But the Red Sox are in town right now.
Yeah.
Against Oakland A's.
Uh-huh.
How about that series being played here in Sacramento?
Yeah.
You know, a chance to see the Red Sox, a chance to see the Yankees when they come. And so the Mariners, you know, like, and so there's some big names out there that, you know, would be staying here at the Sawyer Hotel.
Sure.
Probably. It's funny. When the Yankees would come to Boston, they'd stay at the Ritz-Carlton. And this is during their heyday when they had A-Rod and Jeter and everything. You would think the Beatles were staying at that hotel. The level of security and fans outside. Imagine that here in Sacramento. Just how crazy that would be when the Yankees come to town.
As you probably know, the A's last year had a guy that led the American League in stolen bases. Mm. Yeah, I want to make sure I get his name. Esteury Ruiz.
Yes, okay? Ruiz. Yeah.
Led the league in stolen bases. Got off to in the first weekend of the season, hit .429.
Hell of a start.
Yeah.
What happened to him?
They sent him down.
Hold on, you're playing too well. You're trying to help us win games. What are you doing? Like,
and they said, well, you know, he strikes out too much. He struck out one time in the opening weekend.
Oh, my God.
He needs to get on base. And like I said, he hit .429.
Yeah.
So, you know, they
what are they doing?
They signed a guy and they had too many outfielders or I don't know. You know, maybe the union gets involved in that. But that's the type of franchise we're hoping that we get hitched up with. Guys, hit .429. Send him down. Got to get on base more.
Yeah. It's an awfully run franchise right now. It really is. And I think they had 6,000 announced at yesterday's game, which is the Red Sox in town. And they still could only pull in 6,000.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you remember? I remember I wasn't at the game, but when the great A's teams, you know, Charlie Finley's A's, they all dispersed because of free agency. And the A's were miserable late 70s. They were terrible. And no one went to the games. And they had a game against the Seattle Mariners in Oakland. And Seattle was like a brand new team. And they were terrible. They had fewer than 1,000 people there. They had, and that was the announced attendance. You know, sometimes they will pad the numbers and say, it's 10,000. And you look around and go, there's not even 4,000. They had, I think it was 700-something fans.
What?
Yeah. 700? I'll look it up for you. It's a record. Yeah. So things have been worse. Yes. But we should find out more tomorrow. I'm a little suspicious, Drape. Should I be? Everything we hear that's leaked on this is, well, they're going to Sacramento.
Yeah.
Everything.
Yeah.
That leads me to believe that perhaps all the leaking is designed to pressure Oakland to do more to keep them.
Coming from the A side of things, the franchise side of things.
Yes. Like, oh, boy, it's looking great in Sacramento.
Yeah,
we're going to Sacramento. What are they going to do about it?
Sweeten your deal.
Yeah.
And to your point, man, you know, a lot of people don't want to be used. Don't want the city used as a pawn, a bargaining chip for the A's to get what they want from Oakland. Mm-hmm, and you might be right. That might be what's happening.
We may know, but middle of next week?
Middle of next week.
Exciting times to be a sports fan in Sacramento. The Clippers in town tonight when we come back here. Russell Westbrook, one of the most popular Clippers. Is he overreacting to the heckling? He got into it with a fan again over the weekend. That's next year from the Golden One Drive Guys on Sactown Sports.
Drive Guys, live and local, every afternoon, Monday through Friday on Sactown Sports.
Kings and Clippers.
Yeah.
Nice. Got the Drive Guys here. And, of course, Clippers loaded with stars, even though Kawhi Leonard's not playing tonight. Drapes, as you probably know, Russell Westbrook got into it with a fan over the weekend, a Charlotte Hornets fan. This was during Sunday's game, and fan was, let's see, he was riding Westbrook pretty hard in the first half. Russell Westbrook went after the guy. There's video of this, and Russ said, "I got kids. Don't disrespect my name. I don't give a bleep to what." And then the spectator said something. Russ said, "I don't give a bleep." And we're not clear if the guy was thrown out or maybe just things stopped from there. You know, in the past, so Westbrook has really gotten upset when fans have called him Westbrick.
Mm-hmm.
In 22, I think, when he was with the Lakers, some fans there did that, and he said his family was there, and he was really upset by that. This is the second time this season he's gotten into it with a fan, presumably about that, but we're not exactly sure. Right. Do you think, in your opinion, is he overreacting a little bit, or what do you think?
Maybe, but, you know, I've been down low and heard some things from fans, even in this building here, that, in my opinion, crossed the line. And I just think, you know, instead of, you know, having a discussion about, you know, is Russell Westbrook, you know, too sensitive or whatever the conversation may be, I think the conversation should be like, why would a fan do that? Like, why would, like, are you trying to be funny? Are you trying, like, why are, you know, I think fans at times go too far. I mean, I was here that Tuesday night when the Mavs were here for the nationally televised game, and usually I don't get to hear the fans because I have my headset on, but because I wasn't working, I didn't have my headset. And some of the things that were shouted at Luka, unbelievable. And so I just think at times fans, yes, go too far. And, you know, I was sitting next to a Mavs guy. I'm talking about the Luka situation. And we were like, people wouldn't say that on the street. Like, if Russell Westbrook was walking down the street and this guy was walking past, he wouldn't be like, "Hey, what's up, Westbrook?" You know, like, I don't know why fans feel the need or think paying for a ticket allows you to, you know, say certain things to players. Now, that's, you know, in the whole, you know, scheme of insults and things, maybe that's not that strong, but we know Westbrook hates that.
Yeah. You
know, we know that's a trigger for him. And so 9 times out of 10, I'm going to be on the side of players because, you know, some of the things that fans say, it just crossed the line.
I'm with you. On the surface, that looks like it's not that big a deal, is it? Right. However, he made it clear, as I said, I think it was really in 22 when it came to a head, he felt like, my kids are there. They don't like hearing that. That's their name. And so he decided he was gonna take a stand, make a stand on it. I applaud him for the way he handled this. If someone says something, you know, he could point and say, get that guy out of here. He goes over to the fan. Said, don't call me that. I appreciate it that he, like you say, the fan treats him like he's not even human.
Yeah.
Russell
yeah.
Westbrook goes and faces the guy, you know, person to person, like, why are you calling me that? So I appreciate the way he's handling this. There's also an article today, might be in The Athletic. I don't know if you saw this. What? A lot of players now say the things that they are hearing during games from gamblers is out of control.
Yes.
Fans, you know, blaming you, so-and-so, you cost me my money.
Right.
And we talked about this a few weeks ago. Halliburton said, it's like I'm a prop.
Right.
I'm not even a person to these
fans. Right. And you're right about the gambling situation. I mean, you know, guys will scream out, you know, or people will scream out, hey, man, I got you on this parlay, you know.
Yeah.
Like, just – and it's gone too far. And But I think what we're seeing, you know, from fan behavior really is just a microcosm of our society now. You look at social media, let's say, and how brave people are, or cowardly, however you want to look at it, because a lot of these times these people don't put their real name.
Oh, yeah, they're hiding.
Behind, you know.
They think there's some barrier there. Then when you have a LeBron or Westbrook turn around, walk through the barrier and confront them, they're,
like the Kevin Durant situation, remember?
Mm-hmm.
Kevin Durant, where was that? Was that Charlotte, too? That might have been Charlotte also. I'm trying to think. A few weeks ago.
Uh-huh.
And so I just think, you know, fans and people in general just have to be better, man. You know, because at the end of the day, These are human beings, you know. Westbrook doesn't go to your job and start, you know, yelling. Like, just because, you know, you paid for a ticket doesn't give you the right to verbally abuse this man at his job. And so, like I said, most of the time I'm on player's side. And, you know, you talked about how Westbrook handled it. He's a better guy than I am because I would get the fan out of there, you know. Like, players have that power to eject fans, get them ejected. And I would flex the muscle, be like, that dude, out of here. He got to go, you know. And that's how I would play it. And so Westbrook handled it differently.
According to the LA Times, that was at least the fourth time this year Westbrook has taken part in some sort of verbal sparring with members of the crowd. Mm-hmm. Let's see. One of those happened November against the Nuggets in LA. And Westbrook said, if I'm responding, there's a reason I'm responding. Understanding what Westbrook means, understanding how important that is to my dad, my grandfather, my family. It's very important. It's something I stand on, and respect is a big thing that I value. So the moment that line gets crossed, I won't allow it no more.
Right. He's gone on record as saying that.
Yeah, he said, my son is old enough to know what's going on and asking me, hey, Dad, what does that mean? Now I got to stand on it.
Yeah, exactly. And think about this. When you're in an arena with 17,000, 18,000, some of the things that these players hear, and it's probably not even just that one. You know, I think about the Devin Booker situation in Dallas a few weeks ago as well. He got into it with a fan. And there comes a point where, as a person, as a human being, you get tired of it and you react. And these guys aren't robots. I know, you know, people say, oh, they make a lot of money and, you know, they should be above that and everything like that. But who am I to tell Russell Westbrook how he should react to being insulted? You know, if that's, you know, he didn't put hands on the person. He didn't throw down. Like I said, I would have handled it differently. I would have got, you know, ejected this person, got this person ejected. Westbrook decided to handle it how he handled it.
I know there are some players. I've been talking to Eric Burns about this, former River Cat. And, you know, you're going to, if you're an outfielder, fans are going to ride you a little bit. But he would say, you know, there's some cities where you'd listen to him, and sometimes you got to go, okay, that's a pretty good one.
Yeah.
You know, because it's kind of almost a game.
Right.
But maybe it's because in the NBA the players are so close. You know, they're right there. And maybe it's just, as you say, where we are now as a society,
right.
It's gotten more personal and it's gotten a lot more pointed. And it's not just, hey, you're on the other team, so I'm going to ride you a little bit.
Yeah.
It's like personal insult.
Yeah. And, you know, I go back to the situation with Luka last week, and I'll tell the story. I'm sitting there at my normal broadcast location, and Luka's talking to a ref or something, and somebody yells out, you know, really close to where I was, Luka, stop acting like a whiny, the B word, the A word and the B word. And it's like, what are we doing? Like, why? Like, what would make you think to yell something like that? And it just, you know, I have a saying, man, and this is, I'll take you behind the curtains. Sometimes I wish people could get their butts kicked. Like, it was okay to square up and just, you know, because I think a lot of people feel protected in these arenas because they know the players aren't going to go do anything. You know, it's sort of like being at a zoo or something like that. The animals are in the cage and they can't get out. So you poke the bear, if you will, or you poke animals behind the cage. And so I just think, man, you know, fans got to be better, man. I think because you pay money to watch these guys play. You don't pay money to come heckle these guys and insult these guys and call them names. I just think that's ridiculous.
Yeah, I know there's an NBA fan code of conduct, but then, you know, what happens when that is breached? I'll never forget in the old building when C-Webb, after he got traded, his first game back in Sacramento. He came in with the Sixers and Iverson, and
yeah,
it was a pretty good team. It was pretty clear that night, for what it's worth, Iverson and his teammates decided, we're setting up our guy tonight. It was one of the best games I've ever seen Iverson had.
Okay.
And he was playing pure point guard. But anyway, in the stands, it got, as you can imagine, really ugly, because this was Chris Webber coming back, beating the Kings, you know, with another team. And things got really ugly in the stands.
People were mad at Webber?
They were mad at each other.
Right.
And I remember where we were, things started getting, like, physical. And, you know, I'm looking around for, like, an usher, and there's this woman, and she was one of the ushers in, like, a, you know, windbreaker, and she had no
hope. Can't handle
she was not, she wasn't a security guard. She was the usher, and she had no chance. And I remember that night, it was like, oh, It was so ugly.
Yeah.
But my point is that, yeah, there's a code of conduct, but there's really only so much any security can do unless you're going to beef up security, which, by the way, I think a few teams have actually done this year.
Really? Yeah, and I've actually thought, too, something's going to happen, whether it, you know, it was the malice at the palace, but something's going to happen where the proximity of fans to players is going to change at some point in the NBA. I mean, they're right there.
Yeah.
You know, they're
yeah.
they could reach out and actually do, touch a player, like an impact, you know, a player or do something. Sort of like, remember way back, you know, I'm going back, Monica Seles. Remember
that
situation?
Mm-hmm.
Guy came out of the stands.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, like there will come a point where I think, you know what, fans won't have as much access and proximity to the players.
Yeah, and yeah, we don't need to talk about it, but it's very dangerous.
Yes.
Don't want to put any thoughts on anybody's head, but obviously you watch a game, and there's not ever enough security right at the moment if something were to happen.
Right, right.
Just
exactly.
Not.
You know, you beef it up as best. And, you know, I've talked to the security guards here, you know, and they do a fine job. Their
My
head,
buddy Sean Rogers?
Yeah, my boy Sean and, you know, some of the other guys, and their head is constantly on a swivel.
Sure.
Like they said, Kyle, all it takes is one, and you just don't know which one. So you got to watch them all. You got to keep an eye on everybody, and their head is constantly on the swivel out here.
I know, because I've known him a long time, and so whether he's on TV or I'm here, sometimes I look at him and I'm watching him, and he's like you say,
he's just
he's not enjoying the game.
Right, it's not right. He's not just sitting back watching the game. No, he's watching everybody in the crowd. Yeah.
All right. When we come back, guess what? Yesterday we missed a chance for Drapes to heap praise on his favorite quarterback. So we're going to circle back. Good thing we got Nate running the board.
Yeah,
today,
of course.
Too. A little Brock Purdy talk. You
My lucky
that?
Day. Yeah,
on this?
Let's do it. It's been a while since he lost. I haven't talked about him since that L. So let's do it.
Oh, that's next when we return to the Gold One Center. Drive Guys on Sactown Sports.
The Drive Guys powering your afternoons Monday through Friday on Sactown Sports.
Special, special day coming to you from the Golden One Center. Coming up about half an hour, the great Jerry Reynolds is going to join us. Of course, all guests come via the Folsom Lake Honda hotline. Folsom Lake Honda, your one-stop Honda shop. We're going to talk Brock Purdy in just a little bit. I mean, because he deserves a ton of credit for what he did. He just picked up a little extra cash as well, Drapes.
Did he? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and he earned it.
He earned it.
He earned it. Before we get to that, 339-1140, 1-800-920-1140. Steven has been hanging on to talk with the Drive Guys. Steven, what's up? Thanks for hanging.
Good afternoon, boys. How you guys doing?
Good.
What's up, Steven?
Perfect. Dude, Kyle, first off, your Kirkland golf balls, you know they're made by PXG. I don't know if you knew that, but your Kirkland golf balls are made by PXG.
I had heard something like that. Okay.
Yeah. And second of all, this is all golf related, so I'm gonna make this real quick. I work with a 17-year-old kid. Okay. I was talking about golf with him yesterday because I'm a casual golfer. I've been golfing for like 20 years, very, very casually. He's got bad knees, so he's like, "Yeah, I picked up golf 2 years ago. You know, at 15." I'm like, oh, good for you, man. Good for you. You know, how you doing nowadays? How you doing? Oh, my handicap is one. I almost had a heart attack. I almost had a flipping heart attack, boys.
That's disgusting.
This kid is 15 years old and picked up golf 2 years ago and has a handicap of one. And said it with the most confidence I have ever seen a 17-year-old say anything, ever. And I was like, you're really a one? And he confidently was like, yeah, I can show you my – I'm going to be in a tournament. He's actually in a tournament today, a two-day tournament. And, yeah,
wow.
He picked up golf 2 years ago and has a handicap of one. That shit,
are we talking
that
real golf or
so.
Like Scandia, Steven? Is he a real golfer or like a puppy?
No, real, like he hits the links. He plays 18, plays a full 18. And I ain't talking about the McKenzie putting courts either, like a full real 18, man.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to share that with you because you guys are some fellow golfers too, man. I know you guys would understand that. Boy.
Right. That's,
thank you,
that's,
Steven.
Oh, thanks, Steven. Yeah. That's hard to fathom and swallow.
That make you feel
I
good about
hard
yourself,
at
does
it, man. It's like – and even my son who's 14, you know, he can out-drive me. Like, these kids nowadays, they're smacking the ball, too. Mm-hmm. He can outdrive. He just doesn't know the course management very well. But, you know, golf is such a thing, it's such a crazy thing, because I feel like almost the more you want it, the worse you are. Like, you want
it's
it
so
zen.
It's very zen.
It's zen, right? Yeah. You got to be calm, cool, collected. But I think I'm gripping the club. I'm like, I want this so badly. I'm working so hard, and it's sort of it's just not working out for me, man.
I was talking, as I told you before the show, with RJ. We were talking about golf and how hard it is, and he says, you know, I got a buddy. And he was telling me, you know, the difference between a pro golfer and just a regular golfer. And he says, my friend says, oh, I can shoot a 64, but I can't do it every day. And I'm like, wait. You know somebody who can shoot a 64? Yeah.
That's true. That's a true story, huh?
Yeah. Oh, RJ, your buddy shoots 60. He can shoot a 64?
Has.
Hey, yeah.
Just one time.
You're kind of burying the lead there, RJ.
A 64. Yeah. Wow, that's impressive. Anything with an 8 in front of it, I'm happy with. Like those.
Oh, I'm with you.
Anything in the 80s, I'm like, all right, okay. But it's been few and far between for me.
Uh-huh. 339-1140, 1-800-920-1140. Let's see. Who do we have? We have
Pam.
Pam, thank you.
Yes.
Pam, you're with the Drive Guys. What's up?
Hey, I have a couple of questions for you. One, I'm just going to joke with you for a minute because I'm almost 70, but I was a 1, and I'm a 5 right now, and I don't like anything with an 8 in front of it.
Wow, that's impressive. Okay, Pam. Okay.
All right, I just had to make it funny. So I got a question about basketball, but particularly the NCAA women's basketball. I'm also an attorney, and so I decided I'd pull out the NC2A rules to read the rules because I cannot, even though I followed it forever and played a little, figure out what they are calling out there on the floor in the women's game, and particularly as to when they're calling fouls on the bigs versus the guards. And it's gotten to the point where none of, you know, the really good players can't even stay in a game. I happen to be a Stanford fan. Cameron Brink can't even play a game. I mean, she's in foul trouble from the first 5 minutes. Last night, Angel Reese fouled out of the game. You know, that's their big star. Yeah. And it's like any kind of – you could call a basketball foul anytime, almost on any play, because there's always contact. But the way they're calling them right now, it's just so frustrating to even watch. What do you guys think?
I think
you gotta let him play.
Yeah, you gotta let him play. But you know, I think it's very hard to officiate bigs versus the guards. You know, and we see it on the NBA level. You know, with Domantas Sabonis. You know, and you know he gets, you know, battered, bruised, abused, if you will. Doesn't get the foul call. It's sort of like Shaq too back in the day. Like when Shaq fouls somebody, a little guard, it looks much worse than when a regular sized person. And I just think it's hard. And you're right about Cameron Brink. I've been watching her all season long, last couple of years, and you know, one of the game's great players. But I just think her, Angel Reese, they are hard to officiate, hard to guard. And I also believe, Whitey, and I've said this before, you know, when it comes to NBA, like sometimes the officials are just bad.
Mm-hmm.
They just get calls wrong. And it's such a hard job. You make the call in a split second. You can't say, oh, wait, my bad, I got it. You know, once you make the call, you got to stick with it. Right or wrong, you got to stick with it. And it's just a hard job for the officials out there.
Yeah, I don't know if you were suggesting this or not, Pam. So maybe you weren't. But if you were suggesting that they call the women's game differently than the men's game, well, you said you played, so you know how wrong that is. And I know from, you know, coaching in middle school girls, when coaches coach basketball to women or girls – you don't coach it differently.
Differently,
you know, it's like, well, you're a girl, so you don't do this or that. It's not taught differently.
Right.
It's still basketball, so it has to be officiated the same way.
Yeah, it's still basketball. It has to be officiated. So, and I think, you know, to Pam's point, I think bigs being officiated one way is the same in women versus men, too. Like, no matter the league, I feel like it's hard to officiate some of the bigger athletes.
Yeah, post-play, there's going to be physicality, or else you're not allowing them to play basketball.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, we see it at night in and night out. The question is, and the problem that I have, and we've talked about it, when officials have different levels of physicality that they'll allow.
Uh-huh.
One official will allow this, but the other one does. What's marginal contact? And I think that's where you get into the gray area.
Mm-hmm. What a great year, though, for women's basketball. Oh,
it's been amazing. It's you know, watching Caitlin Clark last night, Angel, like, it's Paige Beckers. I mean, just the star power mm-hmm. when it comes to women's basketball and the skill level at that. And, you know, and I've always said, and maybe this is controversial, but I've always liked the women's game because I felt they were more skilled basketball players. They didn't rely on athleticism as much or dunk, you know, like their dribble, their form when shooting, like everything is on point. And I've enjoyed watching this tournament this
mm-hmm,
year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you, Stephen. Thank you, Pam. 339-1140, 1-800-920-1140. Real quick here, we have to applaud Brock Purdy. Missed this yesterday because we were so involved with the Kings. The NFL compensated players here as part of their performance-based pay distribution.
Yeah.
They gave players compensated players with an additional $393.8 million in performance-based pay for this season. This program compensates players based on their playing time and salary levels. They want to give additional money to players who performed beyond their contracts.
Yeah.
Brock Purdy gets an extra $739,795.
So he almost doubles.
Yeah.
Can you imagine?
Yeah.
Get a bonus that nearly doubles your salary?
Yeah, that's 75.1% of his base salary that he made in 2023.
And well-deserved, though. Brock Purdy had a hell of a season. I'm not going to bash Brock or anything. This is not the time for that, Whitey. He led the squad to the Super Bowl. He had an MVP caliber season.
Uh-huh.
He well outperformed his contract.
Yes.
Yes, well-deserved.
Yes. The additional check for him, that's 24th largest payout this year. How about this? Former Ravens guard, a guy named John Simpson,
yeah.
He got a payout of $974,613
wow.
That nearly doubled his salary after playing last season on a one-year minimum contract of $1.01 million.
That's sweet. That
yeah.
is sweet. Congrats. Did you hear about Aaron Rodgers, how much he got paid out?
How much?
$84, I think it was. Because yeah, he played to one snap.
That's brutal, Dre.
$84 Aaron Rodgers
That's
got
good
paid
for him.
Out. That's good for him, right?
Nice. Nice. Simpson, by the way, he signed a two-year deal with the Jets in March with Aaron Rodgers' team, so he could earn up to $18 million. And then we know that, you know, Nate knows as well as anybody, Brock Purdy, pretty soon, a couple years, he's going to be making a lot.
Yes, he's gay. You're going to have to open up the checkbook for him.
He's got that.
Get rid of some players, some talent.
Yeah.
That Toyota deal.
Working together.
Yeah.
On the day when he becomes the highest paid quarterback in NFL history.
He might. And he's like a college athlete working on NIL right now. Like his endorsement money is more than his salary in the NFL. He's like got an NIL deal going right now.
Yep. When we come back, we'll take a glance at Domas's all-league chances. Some voters on the NBA all-league teams there. They're sharing their ballots. Interesting. We'll take a look at those when we come back to the Golden One Center, Drive Guys on Sactown Sports.